Oak Session number 13952, Reel 3.
Reel 3. Now, can you tell me about the breakout and heading towards the River Seine, please?
Yes, well, we went from the breakout. We then moved to the crossing of the River Seine. We crossed at Vernon. But the next one or two skirmishes, but my company was not involved until we got to Tilly, which was a small French town. And we did an attack on Tilly. We had about 20 or 30 prisoners that came in off of that action. We didn't lose any men.
How was the attack conducted at Tilly?
It was a question of clearing farm buildings and a general typical infantry advance of platoons moving forward under cover of another platoon until we reached the outskirts of the farm buildings and accumulated cottages, and there in front of us was open ground, and we then came to a halt there. The next day, all our soft-skinned vehicles were unloaded because the guards armoured, of course, had disappeared into the distance, and I believe they then travelled right through to Brussels without any opposition. And to get supplies up to them, then all our soft-skinned vehicles were taken away, as of other battalions, I expect, as well, because at that time, of course, the stores were still coming through onto the Mulberry Harbour, diesel and petrol coming on Pluto, and it all had to be carried by the Army Service Corps across France and up to the Guards Armoured. When we did eventually move, we moved on troop carriers, and we had the battalion had the honour of being the first infantry in to Brussels. Celebrations were still going on when we arrived, and it was like travelling through the Lord Mayor's Shire with hundreds and hundreds of Belgian civilians on the sides of the road cheering us as we went in. And the battalion took up occupation of the Hospital Saint-Jean in Brussels and went out on various duties from there. I myself had to take a half a dozen soldiers and take over a German hospital that was full of wounded officers. Another platoon went to guard the underground cellars where all the looted wines and spirits that the Germans had accumulated. A dangerous thing to do, to put soldiers that had been in action in charge of a big underground wine store, but I don't think they abused it. I know that when we moved on to Operation Market Garden, that there was an accumulation of goodly spirits in the back of most vehicles.
When the civilians greeted you in Brussels, were they giving you anything?
No. They didn't give us anything. But after we'd settled in at the Hospital Saint-Jean and got ourselves organised, for the first day, we were able to walk out into the town of Brussels, and the Belgian ladies were taking the divisional signs off of the soldiers' tunics, where they were giving them to them, and any little bits and pieces that they had on their uniforms. And it was not unusual to see a Belgian lady in a fur coat with a wyvern sewn on to the front of it, which was the insignia of the 43rd Wessex Division, which of course we had. If we went, I only went in, on one occasion, went into a restaurant, and as soon as a little group of us walked in, and as soon as we did, there was absolute silence, and then all the Belgian people that were in the restaurant all started singing "It's a Long Way to Tipperary" and that sort of thing.
Did any of your soldiers get off with any of the ladies and brothers?
I would think it quite likely. Yes, I would think it quite likely. Actually, I had a my company clerk, a young man by the name of Williams, who was a very shy lad. And after I got back from my tour at the hospital, where the German officers were, and I went back to my company headquarters at the hospital at Saint-Jean, and I went up into the room that Major Braithwaite had got as the company office, and young Williams said to me, "Sergeant Major," he said, "I've had my first woman." So perhaps they did get off with some of the local girls.
Do you think he might have been just boasting?
I don't know. Maybe he was. Maybe he was.
Any other memories from Brussels?
Only one memory, and that was when we went to the Hospital of Saint-Jean, which was a big building. Lots of little rooms that would have been wards, I guess, for sick Belgian people, which the Germans had taken over in entirety. There were beds. And before a lot of the Germans had left, they had defecated onto the blankets that were on the beds. And so we had a lot of cleaning up to do before we could really move in. As a matter of fact, which disgusted us, but there we are.
Where did you go to after Brussels?
Well, after Brussels, of course, we took part in the Operation Market Garden. There was 30 corps went up the causeway. We crossed the Ascot Canal on the 17th. We got as far as Eindhoven, where we linked up with the 101st American Airborne with no trouble at all. They had captured the bridge over the canals at Grave, and we stayed the night in that area, and then we moved on up the causeway. We never had any problems. The guards armoured had was clearing the way in front of us, and we eventually arrived at Nijmegen, where the 82nd American Airborne had landed. But of course, at the time that we arrived there, they had not captured the bridge over the wall. We did street clearing in Nijmegen. There were one or two skirmishes, and we rounded up some prisoners. But the corridor had been cut off, and it was cut off for 48 hours, so we had no supplies coming up. But there was a German army food dump in Nijmegen, and so we lived on German rations for a couple of days, which was an experience. Then, of course...
In what way was it an experience?
Pardon?
In what way an experience?
Well, they had some sort of bread that was in tins, black bread in tins. They had sort of potpourri of vegetables in a big tin, which could be turned into a stew. Then they had the... inevitable German sausage type of thing, which was also in tins. their coffee, which was undrinkable, very ersatz, probably crushed acorns, I don't know, burnt acorns, which we couldn't drink. But what we could get together of their food, it satisfied a need at the time.
What about the civilians in Nijmegen?
The civilians in Nijmegen, yeah, but we had great welcome from the Dutch as soon as we got into Holland over the Escher Canal. The Dutch civilians were standing on the side of the road, and there were glasses of Dutch gin,
schnapps,
that's right, and wine. And of course, being September, it fruit picking time, apples and pears were being offered to us. And I'm driving our Brengang carrier, and Brengang carrier where the driver is sitting is open, and a lot of fruit was being put into the cockpit, and I was up over my ankles with crushed fruit. Every time I was changing gear, then, of course, I was squashing pears and things like that. But we had a great welcome from the Dutch. And that also happened at Eindhoven. My memory of Eindhoven is passing the Philips factory, which is the biggest factory in that area. And then into Nijmegen, where the Dutch civilians gave us a great welcome. Dutch resistance chaps would make contact with us, and on our street clearance of the Nijmegen area, we had a Dutch resistance chap with each of the sections, taking us around the various streets of the town. Well, then of course, eventually the 82nd Airborne made a crossing in small boats when they arrived, and Sergeant Robinson of the Guards, which is history, of course, was the first Guards armored tank across the bridge at the wall. Most of our battalion on foot crossed the railway bridge, but I drove my carrier over the road bridge and linked up with the rest of the company who'd come over the railway bridge. And it was at that time that the reconnaissance regiment had reported back that they had taken some side roads and had got up to a town called Drill, which was just behind the Nieder Rhine. And so my battalion were switched along this narrow road, and without any opposition, we managed to get to the Rhine Dyke, just to the west of Arnhem, and we took up a defensive position in that area. But on the second or third day that we were there, you have to imagine that the Rhine Dyke, which was a flood barrier along the with a road on top of it that went along the side of the Rhine, and in some places the Rhine was 300 yards in front of us, and in other places it would be 3/4 of a mile, open ground. But just to the left of us was some high ground just to our front, and on this high ground there was a brick factory. And under cover of mist one night, some SS soldiers came across from the Arnhem side, and they took up a defensive position in this brick factory. And we put in 5 company attacks on this brick factory, but we never cleared the Germans out of it. And as a result of these attacks, we had 42 men killed, quite a lot wounded. And at one stage, a German officer came across with a white flag. Could we stop fighting for one day so that they could recover their wounded and dead people? But the colonel said, yes, we'll do that, but you bring them into us and not take them back over the river, which they did. We were eventually...
So they brought their wounded into you?
Into us, yes. Into our... We passed them back to the field dressing station.
Were there many of them?
Oh, there's quite a number. So it was 20 or 30 wounded and upwards to about 40 dead. It was quite a battle area. And we had lost some very good soldiers there.
So were you there when the Germans brought in their wounded?
I was there initially when some of them came in. I was there in the early stages when they came in, but then I had to go back to my company headquarters.
What do you remember of that? Can you give some more details of that incident?
Well, it was a traumatic occasion. Because I suppose that you could look at any wounded man, some of them badly wounded, and say, there but for the grace of God go I. Some of the lads were lighting cigarettes and pushing them into the mouths of the German wounded. We had gathered together a lot of blankets so that they could be covered. I think they were treated with the respect that that soldiers in close combat against one another would give to one another. What I have heard and read since the war of any atrocities that were against British soldiers, it was usually done by troops in the back areas that were not really involved in the fighting.
But you said these were SS troops?
Yes. Some of them were SS.
Did you talk to any of the Germans who brought in the wounded?
No.
Did you see them?
No, I didn't.
Close up?
Yes, I saw them close up. If I can just come forward a few years, until 2 years ago, because the comrades of the 7th Battalion, the Bournemouth branch, we go back to Hatron every other year, where the where there is always a ceremony at our monument there. And 2 years ago, I went across to the factory buildings, which is now a monument, with an elderly Dutch couple that are looking after it. And I went across to have a look at it, the first opportunity that I'd had, really. And the old Dutch gentleman who was there said that there was a German soldier who had been there earlier on in the morning, and he had said that he was here at the factory firing across at the British that were on the Rhinedike, and he would be coming back in the afternoon. And so I said, I will come back in the afternoon. And I went back, and sure enough, there was this German veteran, this old German, walking with a stick. And we looked at one another, and he put his hand out to me, and we shook hands. And he didn't have any English, I didn't have any German, but with sign language, he showed me where he was, in one of the kilns, which faced across to where our position was, and he had a machine gun there, he said.
So you didn't have any hard feelings?
No hard feelings, no.
What impression did the German soldiers make on you, whom you saw bringing in the wounded at the Rhinedyke.
Yes, well, they were some of the best German troops that were in the area of Oosterbeek and in the Arnhem area, and they were I would think quite well trained soldiers, the ones that had come across to the brick factory. And of course, also the at some stage while we were on the Rhinedyke, the Dorsets crossed over the Rhine to try and reinforce the airborne pocket in the area of the Hartestein and the Oosterbeek area, but of no avail. And then we were given the orders that they were going to try and get as many of the airborne back over the river as possible. They would come back into the area where the Dorsets were assembled. But we sent some of our chaps down there to give them a hand. All our cooks were withdrawn in a rear area where food was prepared, and what we had to do. My company and C Company was at midnight to fire everything we had across the river into the Oosterbeek area to make as much noise as we possibly could while the airborne were being brought back over. And of course quite a lot were brought back.
This was fighting at the brick factory, seems to have been right in the early days of October 1944.
It was more towards the end of end of September, because we stayed in this area until about the 4th of October. So the brick factory battles lasted from the 1st of October to about the 4th of October. And then we were relieved by the units of the 101st American Airborne that came up from the Eindhoven Graz area. And they continued with the battles at the brick factory, and they lost quite a lot of men there as well. There was the Screaming Eagles, they called themselves. And so now, on the Rhinedyke, in the area of Hatern, there are three monuments, one to the Screaming Eagles, one to the 7th Battalion of the Hampshire Regiment, and the other one to the Royal Engineers at the spot where the airborne were brought back over from the Arnhem area. The battalion then moved back to Groesbeek, for a rest area. When we had mobile bars and that sort of thing. Can I tell you an amusing story?
If you would.
Well, when we were on the Rhinedyke, my company headquarters was in the root cellar of this farm building, and in the back, in the outbuildings, there was nine small piglets. They're about half grown. So one of the lads in the company was a butcher, and so of course we had roast pork and that sort of thing, and we fed very well while we were there. Well, when the Americans came, we handed them over six pigs. Very pleased with them. We went back to the area of Groesbeek. On the second day, my company commander said to me, "We were silly, Sergeant Major. We should have brought one of those pigs on with us." I said, "Yes, you're absolutely right. Tomorrow, if you like, I'll take the butcher and the carrier and a couple of lads, and I'll nip back up to Hatron, see the American commander and see if he'll let us have a pig. So he said, well, if I were you, I should take a bottle of whiskey with you, which I did. Went back up and saw the American commander, negotiated for one pig. He wasn't too keen, but when I produced a bottle of whiskey, he said, okay. So I'm discussing with the butcher whether we should kill the pig. It'd be easier to carry it if we killed and gutted it there. And we were talking about this when a runner came in from one of the flank platoons of the American unit to say the Germans were trying to cross the river at Ramwick. There was a ferry that used to run across from Ramwick. They're trying to cross. So we'd heard some firing from that area, so I thought it was time that we got out of it. So I said to the butcher, grab the pig, we're off. And he grabbed the pig, and it was squealing and shouting. And off we went back to Grosby. When we arrived back at the company area, the lads were lined up having their meal with their mess tins. So we jumped out of the carrier. The butcher dropped the pig, and the pig immediately ran towards the chaps who began feeding it from their mess tins and scratching its back. So it became more a pet than anything else. And the next day, the lads had built a sty for it out of a tarpaulin. It had a collar around its neck. It had been cleaned, and someone had painted corporal stripes on its side. And it became quite a thing, the D Company's pig. So my company commander went along with the whole thing, and he said, well, I think we ought to take this pig on strength, Sergeant Major. So I said, right. So I organized the company parade, and the CO came down, and the pig was marched out on its lead, all nice and spruce, and we had the pleasure of taking on strength. We called him Corporal Grunt. We gave him an army number, and we took him on strength of the company. And his fame went far and wide throughout the battalion. Lots of officers came down to see Corporal Grunt and scratch his back. Well, eventually it came the time that we should have to move out. So we couldn't take the pig with us. So the lads drove a stake in the ground and tied him onto the stake outside of his out of his sty, and we put up a big notice. We put down his army number, 0001, Corporal Grunt, pig, honorary member, 7th Battalion of the Hampshire Regiment, treat with great respect, because we knew that other units would be coming into this rest area after we left. So instead of becoming pork chops, this animal became a fated animal.
Did it survive?
I rather suspect it did. I don't know. We never saw him again, of course. But I reckon that it did survive, because it would probably be treated as a pet by any incoming unit. Right, from there,